Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we're going to get into it today. Welcome back to another week. For those that are new here, basically one of us teaches the other person about your favorite art history heroes.
They're all drama.
And I like, you know, doing research for this podcast, I'm like, damn, people are really downplaying how fun and gossipy and weird this shit is. Like, people will be like, and so in 1907. And you're like, oh, dude, like, come on, jazz it up.
I just want to hear the tea. You're telling me that this guy is seeing prostitutes and you're not going to fucking talk about it.
You're literally telling me his dick is falling off and you're not going to act like that's fucking crazy to know.
We want to hear that stuff.
Give the people what they want.
We want to be entertained.
Yeah. So we really try and make this like fun, accessible, and we give you all the rumors that exist in history. Yes. Because as we all know, rumors are based in truth. So we're also going to give you the facts, of course, and get through the boring stuff as best we can. We're so happy you're here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being you. So yeah, so thanks so much. And we've had some nice feedback. We always appreciate the stars that you leave on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
You like us. You really like us.
Or the messages we've gotten on Instagram, baroque.b.podcast.
Follow us.
Like, share. We appreciate it so much, like way more than we could ever explain.
We've been making memes.
Yeah, we've been making the memes, the two millennial meme makers over here.
We're learning.
We're growth mindset is the theme of the show. So
2024. We got this.
So did you make any resolutions? I mean, we're second weekend. How you doing on those?
I think I am leaning into no more resolutions.
No more resolutions.
I'm fine. I'm a happy disaster, and I'm leaning into that, and it's just going to be fun. I'm not going to judge myself. I'm going to be real, real toxic about it this year. This is my villain era. I'm developing.
I think that's the opposite of toxic. I think you're like, the self-love, I think, actually, like, creates good habits.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure out what it is.
I'm going to take a sip of wine on that note.
Yeah. So, I guess, what are your resolutions? Do you have any?
I don't make resolutions until my birthday. So, I think about them. You know, what I want for the year is mostly it. Nothing rigid. Nothing, like, you know,
I must lose 120 pounds. Yeah, nothing today. Like
that. It's more loose goals, like, you know, be more present for my kids. Enjoy where I'm at now, even though I have goals. Live in the moment. Yes. You know, breathe more.
That works.
Focus on the breathing. Get quality sleep.
Sleeping is good.
I make time to nurture my relationship with my husband. You know, all those cheesy, definitely in your 30s sort of things. So, if I break anything or I, you know, on the 21st, I have a little New Year's. So I always on my birthday, I always like to like think of what I'm grateful for that happened in the prior year and then think about goals for that coming year. But yeah, they're never like They're never in the theme of like, I need to be better than I am. They're always like, good. To take care of myself, sort of.
Yeah, thing. That's good. Yeah. Take more baths. Like, eat more good stuff. Not eat more, but like, eat more good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying not to support Starbucks and Amazon as much, even though it's already broke. I already broke that. Like,
make more artisanal coffees for yourself. Or exactly. Something like that, right?
Yeah, high quality.
Treat yourself.
Small businesses. Support small businesses.
That
kind of thing.
Get your coffee at the, you know, the other place down the street.
Yeah, I know it's not a drive through, but it's still good. It's better than Starbucks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do Starbucks, but I get it. Well, this is going to be a long, long one. And I think that we're going to break this into two. Okay. It's a lady. You guys voted. Chelsea knows who it is. There was an overwhelming voting for Georgia O'Keeffe. And yeah, just by a landslide. I put up Cleopatra, Georgia O'Keeffe.
Then we put a
Yoko Ono. No, Yoko Ono. And I think that was it. I think those three ladies. I was really hoping to do Cleopatra, but I'm not going to lie, but I will do it or her at some point. But yeah, you all came out of the woodwork and voted very hard for your girl, Georgia. And I think that a lot of women like love her. Mm-hmm. You know, she definitely made an impact. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
To visualize?
Visualize.
All right, let's do it. Let's visualize. Who's that knocking? Ugh, what do they want now? Someone is always disrupting my perfect day. Solitude. Hello, how can I help you? Oh, so you want to see Georgia O'Keeffe? Well, here is the front of me, and here is the back of me. Now you've seen her. Goodbye. Doesn't anyone value the comfort of being alone? The warm tranquility and coziness of silence? How could they not revel in the sight of a room filled with no one else, nothing but the objects perfectly curated by oneself? Then again, everyone is so uninteresting these days. They probably would die of boredom being left alone. Not me. I love the solace of a wide, open space. It's the only place I feel freedom to be myself, my true self. No one will understand what it all means, and they shouldn't. It's not theirs to comprehend. It's my mind, after all. And these paintings? These paintings are my children. Their true meanings only a mother could understand, right? I'm more than glad to leave this earth keeping my deepest, darkest secrets just that. Secrets. Just like the hidden place where my husband's ashes lay to rest. It's not for them to know or understand, or maybe they will understand one day, but reassurance, it will certainly never be offered by me. Better leave some mystery there. Let them think what they will. I know it will always be best to keep them guessing. So welcome to Georgia O'Keeffe. These flowers, these flowers are hot.
Ooh, she's giving me cunty energy.
Dude.
I love it already.
Oh my God.
She's one of us.
One of us. Yeah, dude. She gives the big cunt energy. And I mean that in like a loving/hatey sort of way. Ooh. But I don't know. So, of course, we immediately have to mention the flower vagina debacle. I mean, I have to be honest, I historically have never been like a huge fan of the work. And I debated, honestly, even saying that because I know people just love her so much. But I want to be honest. And I need to also highlight that the last time I really thought about this, I was only 20 years old. And I haven't taken the time to, like, really grow my understanding of her since then. So I want to honor that. And I was really glad you all voted for her to be the topic of today's podcast for that reason. I'm 34 now. I'm a lot more dynamic of a person. And I'm open to being wrong and less self-centered than I was when I was 20.
Because we knew everything back then.
Oh, my God. I knew so much.
I'm like, don't even tell me.
Don't even try to tell me how I feel. I know this how I bad. Feel. And I'm going to stand by it. And I'm going to double down.
My taste is absolutely developed 100% at age 20.
So refined. Yeah, no. Oh I God. Thought I knew yeah, right. so much about so much. But I want to know, Chol, what do you think? Are you a fan? Like, what's your take?
I'm into that they look like vaginas. Like, okay. That's, I mean, you can, it's so obvious. We're like, girl, I see where your heart is. It is so in your face and really captivating color. She clearly has a pretty hardcore understanding of color theory. Lots of like swirly bits, very Americana. I love anything that's like Southwest themed, though. I'm a sucker for that shit. Give me something turquoise, bitch. I'm a total sucker for some kind of
yeah.
Coca-Cola-y.
You're a total desert babe. Like you love yeah, the desert, right? Desert I love queen. The desert too. I'm really about it.
Even I though it's... I cannot be in the sun for more than 10 minutes,
I hate being hot, but I love being in the desert.
I do like being in the desert, but like in the shade.
Yeah, in the shade. In the shade with like lots of sunscreen.
Love it. Yeah. So,
but yeah, but do you like? So, what do you already know about her? Like, what's your? Do you
I don't know.
A lot?
Too much besides that she might have had a special friendship with our girl Frida Kahlo. Ooh. And I don't know what that friendship entails. That it could be a little saucy, but I do appreciate her work, and I know that there's something to do with feminism or something. I also really love her skull painting. The animal skull paintings are yeah. really cool.
Yeah,
they do seem cool. like from your visuals, from setting the mood, it does seem like there's a little bit of loneliness there. Like it's kind of stark and like an individual in the center of the picture frame always feels like just kind of, okay, icon, but like, okay, what else? Yeah. You know, like, is this right. just you? Is this your inner turmoil? Like, what's going on there? But that's it. I don't really know anything more about who she is as a person. So I'm excited to learn.
Yeah. Ooh. So I'll do my best to paint this long-ass picture because your girl lives to be fucking almost 100. So this is a long-ass story with a lot of twists and turns. Ooh. There is juice. I wasn't sure if there would be, but of course there is. In the past, I sort of thought the work was like the product of a hyper-socialized idea of what being feminine means. Mm. Like, you know, these soft flower paintings, like watercolors. I didn't really see them as like strong. Ooh. And sometimes I think what like the artist is intending and what the viewer actually sees and what people like overwhelming are like, no, they're vaginas.
They're big. Big
can
ass
be
vagina.
Two very different things, right?
It's so, a flower. No. It's a flower. It's
no,
just
it's
a flower.
Flower. It's a flower. Flower.
Right?
It's a flower. And I, you know, so I always thought they were like fluffy and dainty and had to do with gender identity. And like, if it's a vagina, great. I like it more. So we'll get very deep into that throughout this. Because I know it's important to everybody to know, are they vaginas or are they flowers?
That's the argument, right? That's what everyone talks about.
That is the argument. That's what everybody talks about.
What's your inspiration? I think she did. She had a funny thing on Family Guy. Where he's like, oh, yeah. So what's your inspiration? And she's like, oh, what's there? Like, okay, that's nasty, but also I'm laughing. I laughed at it.
I thought it was funny.
I think it's funny.
You're nasty.
You're nasty.
You're nasty. Well, let's get into some context. So the story starts in the mid-1800s in the United States. America is Americaing hard during this time. There's a boom in immigration. There is a rise in transportation via the rail system. And there is westward expansion, aka colonization, and displacing Native American peoples from their homelands happening.
Boo.
New York is a bustling city, and there are definitely bustling cities, but the majority of America, much like today, is farmlands and people living in conditions that I just really don't think we can understand how brutal they were. Like, you're only eating what you grow and maybe what little food you can buy. There's no heat, electricity, no running water typically. And like, how the fuck they did it, I don't know, but they did. And there's a vastness to the open prairies and ruggedness to the wilderness and the frontier. And our story begins in very much like the middle of nowhere, Wisconsin. So who is dad? So daddy is Francis Calixtus O'Keefe. For all you millennials, I know you like to name your kids weird exotic things. Calixtus is C-A-L-Y-X-T-U-S. Calixtus. It's probably pronounced different. He's Irish.
Oh.
And he's a dairy farmer, and he grows up next to Georgia's mom on her dairy farm. Cute. And who's mom? So mom is Ida Ten Ike Toto. Her dad, Georgia's maternal grandfather, George Victor Toto, was a Hungarian count.
Oh.
Yeah.
A count?
Count sounds so exotic, but because I grew up in the 90s, I automatically think of Count Chocula. It's like automatically cannot think about Count Chocula. Or like the number count on in Sesame Street.
Yeah.
One, ha, 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 ha. Two, ha, 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 ha.
So that's how we land.
So he comes to the U.S. in 1848, leaving politically volatile Austria-Hungary. So we just learned about the discontentment in Austria-Hungary during the Egon Schiele episode. But basically, for those who missed it, there's a lot of discontent amongst Hungarians feeling oppressed by Austrian government, and they want to break away. They're like, we don't want to be Austria-Hungary. We just want to be hungry, you fuckers. So he participates in a revolt in the support of Hungarian rights, but then he's like, this is too hot. I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Okay.
And so he leaves and he goes to New York City.
Yeah.
It's the New York.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do. It makes sense. They all land there, Ellis Island, right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's where he meets and marries Isabella Wyckoff. Isabella is Georgia's grandma, and she's of Dutch descent, and her biggest claim to fame is that she has, like, ancestors that came over on the Mayflower.
Oh.
So,
cool.
Original colonizers, right?
Yeah, the enemies. Okay.
The enemy. So they eventually end up in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin, and purchase, like, a huge fucking dairy farm. And they have six kids, Ida, Georgia's mom. So you know how in like 90 Day Fiancé, and I know, sorry about the references, but you know how all the fiancés that are immigrating to America get here and they're like, this is not what I had in mind.
I thought this would be cooler.
I thought this was going to be a lot more exciting. I thought this would be like Bright Lights, Big City. And things like, I hate Canton, Michigan. The most depressing place ever.
Oh, my God. What does one girl say? This is the winter version of hell.
And I'm sorry if you're from Canton, Michigan. I've never been there. I'm sure it's very lovely and exciting.
They got the lakes, right? Y'all got the lakes.
Yeah, the Great Lakes. The Great Lakes. But anyway, so you know, they basically get here and they're like, what the fuck did I do? Why did I come here?
Why did I do this?
Yeah, and I think that's what kind of happens to Grandpa Toto. He's not having great success as being a dairy farmer. He's really not digging the whole like prairie, Great Plains, Great Lakes situation. He's not into it. So he leaves unexpectedly and moves back to Hungary. And George's grandma, Isabella, is left to do like the whole shit by herself. I mean, the taxes, the farming, the house duties, the sixth kid, everything comes down to her. And she's not slacking. Like, she's doing it right. She's doing right by the kids. Wow. She makes sure they're brought up classy as fuck in accordance with their Hungarian Dutch Mayflower royal route. And they have like art education and school and the whole deal.
Well-rounded.
And they definitely think they're like next level up. Don't get me wrong, though. They're not rich. Like, they're poor. They're struggling. But she still figures out a way to make it work. And so you can imagine this like trickles down in Georgia. So Georgia's mom, Ida, is very much like knows her worth, fuck the patriarchy vibes, wants to be a doctor, doesn't care about marriage sort of lady. So when she's proposed to by Francis, she's not in love with him. And in fact, she probably wouldn't have married him if it weren't sort of out of necessity for the family.
Okay.
They have this land and the farm and some dude needs to run it. And he knows how. So she does it out of practicality and out of duty to the family.
You have to have a man for some things back then, I guess.
Listen, my husband is so good at reaching to get things that are high up there. No, he's good at a lot of things, but yeah. But I can certainly get a step stool. But running a fucking dairy farm, I don't think I could do that.
No. We wouldn't be very good at that.
No. So then she gets married to Francis and they have 7 kids, and the second eldest of which is Georgia.
Ooh.
So Georgia Toto O'Keefe is named after George Toto, the abandoner.
There you go. That's great.
Nice. I love that. Thank you for that. Thanks. So she is born November 15th, 1887 in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin.
Oh,
so she is a Scorpio. Yeah, so I didn't know too much about Scorpio, so I pulled this from a great resource, Cosmopolitan. Scorpio character traits include being strong, enigmatic, and independent characters who crackle with an intensity and charisma that makes them unignorable. For all of that power, though, they often remain unknowable to others because they guard themselves and their private lives fiercely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Alex is a Scorpio.
Oh.
I know.
So you bet this is the good. I love this part. You bet there's something juicy going on under the wraps, though, because Scorpios like extremes, challenges, danger, and darkness.
Mm.
They are drawn to the outliers of human experience, even if it's kinky, risky, or thrilling. A Scorpio will be involved somehow.
Oh, for
sure. Yeah. And let me tell you, Baroque BBs, this is on point for our Georgie girl. Ooh. So... yeah, let's keep going. So mom and Georgia are not super close, but mom's busy raising like a fucking million kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Georgia's sort of left out, but she doesn't mind being left alone. In fact, she has quotes saying she like liked being ignored. And it's a constant theme in her life that she loves to be alone. Oh. It's like, fuck you people. Get out of my face. Let me go draw something.
Especially with a house with that many kids, I would be like, y'all get the fuck out of my space. This is my space.
It's a lot. It's a lot of kids to be dealing with.
Really hardcore.
But mom does make sure all the kids are educated. She's like, we are Hungarian count descendants. Mm. And so there's that pride there. She, you know, just like her mom, she makes sure they have violin lessons, piano lessons, art lessons. They go to school. And Georgia grew up doing duplications of out of her mom's art books. Mm. And also her mom would read like rugged Westerners to the kids all the time, which, you know, people loved that shit at the time.
They're
Wild West, you know, Huckleberry Finn, fucking
cowboys. is. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's really like into that Westerner adventure. I mean, you could have probably fucking guessed that based on the workbook.
She likes that.
And this is like in the middle of fucking nowhere, Wisconsin. We're talking 1,000 acreage of farmland. We're talking cattle. We're talking horses. We're talking growing their own food, single school, house, education, small house, farm town life. And Georgia fucking loves it. She loves going for long walks. She likes nature, gardening. She's in.
Nice.
Yeah. And though Georgia likes to be alone, it's not because she's like shy or insecure. In fact, she's really fucking sure of herself and probably more to the point of like, ugh, I just can't be bothered. You're so boring.
You're so beneath boring. Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You understand.
I'm sorry. You're like a child.
I'm sorry. You don't.
We're the same age, but I don't belong at the same table as you.
Yeah, you know, you can sit over there.
For sure.
And so she's not lacking there. And she's confident in her ability as an artist, too. So much to the point in eighth grade, she already is proclaiming, like, I'm going to be an artist one day. And so life is going well and all good. And then a tuberculosis epidemic hits the family.
I know.
Two of her uncles die. And basically, just like we did in COVID, everybody's freaking the fuck out. They don't know what to do. So dad decides, like, we're going to get the fuck out of Wisconsin with the harsh winters. And we're going to move to Williamsburg, Virginia. And this happens when Georgia's 15. So Virginia is like south, right?
Mm-hmm.
Southern Belle.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think this is going to come as a huge shock or anything, but Georgia's not a Southern Belle. You know, they're like Scarlett O'Hara vibes a little later down the line, but still, it's like Scarlett O'Hara vibes. And Georgia's basically prairie town wearing plain dresses, not into the frill. She certainly knows she's not going to like hop onto the fluffy dress bandwagon. She's okay. Like, no, I like my like austere sort of look.
Like big hair and
I like my tight, slick back bun and my practicality.
Oh, man. And
yeah, so you would think, like, being 15 and being thrown into these, like, very effeminate ladies, that you'd be a little intimidated, right? I mean, I would. I'd be like, fuck.
Like, I gotta be I'm more different. Femme.
I'm obviously standing out. You don't typically want to stand out when you're a teenager.
No.
Well, not our Georgie girl. So she's like, y'all are fucking stupid, curling your fucking hair. I can't be bothered. And she inserts herself into the school as the most different, yet insanely admired and loved alternative artsy chick that she is.
Ooh.
And yeah. So they like fucking eat her shit up. They're like, we love it. We're here for it.
It's the confidence. It's the confidence.
It's the confidence. Everybody loves a confident bitch.
Yeah.
It's so true. And so the headmistress at the school puts full confidence in her, too. And she's allowed full access to the art studio at the school. She can go in anytime she wants to. And there's a quote from her yearbook. O is for O'Keefe. As artist divine, her paintings are perfect and her drawings are fine.
Wow.
So this is like what other fucking kids are saying about her. I'm like, dude.
I wish people would say that about me, man. Cool.
I know, right? And so dope. But she was really just that good, I think.
Cool.
So she graduates and then she goes to the Chicago Art Institute. And
ooh, that's the one.
But she fucking hates it. So Chicago Art Institute at this time, I mean, there's Art Nouveau. It's just raging throughout the city. Everything needs to be designy and designed to be beautiful. And art school itself is more of a, like a traditionalist school. And so she's learning as she should. But it doesn't speak to her. She hates the big city. It's very crowded. As we know, she likes to be left alone.
Yeah.
So she's learning traditional methods and design techniques, but is unsure of her art, and despite being ranked first in her class for that year. So even though she's like, I don't know, like, I don't like this, people fucking still are eating her shit up.
Okay.
And so the first year goes really well, but then as luck would have it, she gets typhoid fever and has to move back home.
Oh, no.
And she's super fucking sick. She loses all of her hair.
Oh.
And is basically bedridden and spends a full year recovering and quits painting altogether.
Wow. Okay, yeah. That fucking sucks.
Dude, isn't that so gnarly? Dude. I mean, I remember when you got super sick and that was really intense. And
just a couple weeks though. Well, that was right before school too, of like, listen, you need to make sure that my kidneys start working before school. I just got into grad school. Like, I gotta go. And they're like, you gotta get me out of here like by this date because I need to go, dude.
Because I need to go.
They're like, well, it's kind of up to your kidneys, but okay.
Well, it's the same sort of situation, but way more intense because they don't have things like, you know, steroids or medicine,
the cure.
Medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cure. Anything like that. So she's kind of just like fucking fucked
just
at
sick
home.
For a while. Damn, dude.
Super sick. Yeah, and it's like just a flu, but it fucks her up.
Yeah.
So she quits painting for a while because obviously like this isn't the end of the story.
Yeah.
1907.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Okay, I love you. Okay, that's it. The end. Okay, you're welcome. In 1907, she returns to art school, but this time she goes to the Art Student League in New York City.
Oh.
And she studies under William Merritt Chase. That's her teacher. And he's an American painter, but definitely is influenced by the Impressionists. And Impressionism, remember from last episode, is a break from traditional, more conservative, realistic painting. We see a looseness start to happen in the way the works are made. And this guy really impresses the value of immediacy and not being like married to your image or precious about the work that you're making. And this, she's tasked with making a picture a day on top of the painting from the day prior. So this really helps to like loosen the rigidness and the like preciousness. You can't really be that persnickety about your work when you're having to fuck it up all the time, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, his work is really cool.
Yeah, his work is cool. So look up Dead Rabbit with Copper Pot. So here we see a dead rabbit with a copper pot. And the rabbit is laid out. It's definitely not hyper realistic in that you can see looser brush strokes that make up the image. There's a strong use of light and shadow, and you can clearly see she has a strong understanding of value and tone.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful painting, and it even wins her a prize and a scholarship.
Nice.
The
yeah.
The William Merritt Chase Prize.
Awesome.
But still, even though she's like killing it, she's like, no, I don't like this shit. I'm uninspired. I'm not fulfilled. I don't understand why I need to learn to paint like other people. She didn't really understand the reason behind duplicating.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew she had these like images in her head she wanted to express. But still being a younger artist, she's unsure how to effectively use the medium to communicate at this point.
Uh-huh.
So her family is also struggling really hard after the move to Virginia, and her father goes bankrupt this year.
Yeah.
So just like a really rough year for the O'Keefes.
Yeah.
And it's not really clear whether she drops out again because there's no money or because she doesn't believe that she's like gaining anything from the Art Student League. But if we know our girl, and I think that we do, it's probably because she doesn't give a shit about the things that they're teaching her.
Right, right.
So
she's better.
Yeah,
she's like, better than these fucking guys.
Fucking stupid. So they're dumb. She's like her 20-year-old self. She's like basically being how I felt about her when I was 20. Like, you guys are dumb. Yeah, what is it?
It's not my thing.
Dumb. Bye. Thank you. Next. So she leaves there and goes and works as an illustrator for a while in Chicago, and then she gets fucking measles. And has to go home again.
Come on. Yeah. Who is so giving her all these sicknesses?
Chicago is not her place. She just like always gets fucking sick there.
Yeah.
With the pandemics at the time, just sound like, how did anybody just make it past that time? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you're fucking dying. And on top of that, you have to go out and garden to get your food.
Yeah, like, go garden. shit, man.
So she doesn't really know at this point what art has to offer her or her that she has to offer art. She's not interested in being traditionalist. She's not interested in being an impressionist. She's like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? So then at 25 years old, she takes an art class studying under Arthur Wellesley Dow. And this is a really huge fucking deal for her. He teaches a freer method. It wasn't like traditionalists learning where you make duplication after duplication. The lessons derive from Japanese art principles that Chelsea touches on in the Manet episode. The method revolves around and emphasizes filling a two-dimensional space effectively and beautifully. So there's less pressure for the work to be objective. Mm-hmm. And it's more about just creating like an interesting composition. So let's get a little arty here. So modernism is a shift in art that happens in the 19th and 20th century. And it happens like globally, but independently everywhere. And it's just a rejection of like the old conservative, more traditionalist ideas that art needs to be representational or realistic depictions. Instead, art can now be experimental. So we start to see like shapes, color, and line become the subject matter. And there is a tendency to like abstract the image, which just means to like make it look intentionally different from reality. And there's like a shit ton of different styles that come out of this movement because of that. Yeah. So it's not as easy as being like they're all wobbly or they're all geometric. It's more about the time the work was made in and what it stood for. And this idea that, like, we have more to say and we can create new ways to say it.
And it's, like, the individual artist's interpretation of the subject matter. Yeah, rather than just the best illusion of the subject matter that you can possibly make. It's like, okay, what do you feel about this subject matter? What do you want to have a conversation? What do you want to bring to the table artistically?
Right. And, like, what feeling do you want to give them? And how do they know that this is, like, signature you? Their signature style.
Yeah.
And so we can consider Arthur Wellesley Dow a big influence in American modernism through his teachings of composition. And so composition literally means putting together. It's the way that you lay out where things go in a picture. So think instead of the subjects being the interesting part, it's the way it's depicted through line and shape and color and like how where they go.
how they fit together.
So naturally, this is where she breaks off from making a direct interpretation of reality and where we finally start to see the beginning of Georgia O'Keeffe start to form. The first abstractions, pretty much.
Okay. Who are you, Georgia?
Who is she? So special number 15, if you want to look up this one. It's a good one, strong one. And you can see there is a complete drop-off of anything that would even come close to being traditional art. I mean, we're leaps and bounds from dead rabbit pot painting.
Totally.
And though it does resemble a landscape, the fact that it may be a landscape is like the least interesting part about it.
It's like a bowl with barnacles.
Yeah, there's a bowl.
I don't know.
See, like you could go so many different places trying to figure out what it is. And it's weird. So there's it's like strong line, good use of light and shadow. The forms at the bottom could be trees, but they also could be bubbles or small circles or barnacles, like Chelsea said. And the white circles at the top sort of could be like clouds or pebbles. There's definitely like a nature influence happening, but it's nothing. It's like completely detached really from
like it's,
what nature like actually
is. It's abstract, but it has illusions of depth to it though. So it's not flat like a lot of abstract things are. It's definitely like illusion-y. Yeah. Like I could go in there, but I don't know like where I would be going. Like what? what is this?
I put there's a whimsical darkness to it, and the way that the forms are constructed and placed together keeps your eye moving across the image, intrigued by the way it's made. It's really quite beautiful, and also maybe a little haunting.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's weird.
I like
for
it
for sure.
I like it
a lot. I like it a lot. So Georgia has a series of these charcoal drawings, and she calls them the specials because they meant so much to her. And it's almost as if she had something to say and finally figured out how to get it out. And I mean, can you just imagine the amount of release that she must have felt from that?
Finally, I figured out my thing. I got my thing.
It has happened to me. In front of my face. So anyways, this bitch goes on to teach at like three different schools. She's also taking classes, and she's just up, down, and all around. I'm not going to get into every single little detail, but she does keep close to Arthur Dow, and he really inspires her immensely with his methods of teaching, and they string along throughout her entire life. And so, quote from her, "I said to myself, I have things in my head that are not like what anyone else has taught me. Shapes and ideas so near to me, so natural to my way of thinking that it hasn't occurred to me to put them down. I've decided to start anew, to strip away what I had been taught, to accept as true my own thinking. I was alone and singularly free, working into my own, unknown, no one to satisfy but myself."
Okay.
All right, bitch. Go for it. Love that energy from you. Go ahead, Georgia. Love it. So she sends the drawings to an old friend from Columbia who she's in constant correspondence with, Anita Pulitzer. And Anita is so brazen that she sends them to a man, Alfred Stieglitz. Stieglitz. So let's talk about him. Let's talk about Alfred Stieglitz.
Who are you, Al?
We'll call him Al. So we'll try and keep it brief because we talk about white dudes a lot in this podcast. It's just the reality is a lot of the art in history was only funded if it was made by annoying white dudes, which sucks, but it's an important part of the story. So let's just get it out of the way. Let's just talk about this asshole. So he was born in 1864. And he's 23 years older than Georgia. Okay. And he's already well established in the art industry when they meet. He's of German descent, but born in New Jersey, Hoboken, New Jersey, right. And I can only imagine what a German New Jerseyan accent must sound like. Must be really funky and cool. But anyways, so he was a photographer and an art enthusiast and promoter. And so let's get a little arty again. Look up Flat Iron Building by Alfred Stieglitz. So he's part of a movement called Pictorialism. And this is really sort of an umbrella term for like having an artistic hand in photographs. Mm. We have to remember that photography for a long time was purely to document, like, let's take a picture of this building or these people to stamp them in time and record them. It really wasn't used as an art form. And because of that, people weren't thinking about composition or how to take beautiful photos. So the pictorial movement really starts to focus on the beauty of an image created with composition, atmosphere, and sometimes painting directly onto the photograph or manipulating it in some way. And you can see the artist's input and hand in creating the photo. So in this photograph, you can see there's like a lot of intention in the use of the shadow. Mm-hmm. Definitely would have been a hard hitter on Instagram if he like went, you know, on vacation and then post this like moody city vibes. There are branches and people riding a horse carriage in the foreground, and they're sort of like black shadowy. Mm-hmm. And in the background in the distance is the famous Flat Iron Building. And there's a heavy use of like atmosphere, which basically just is like haziness, fogginess, right? And it's tinged blue. And it's a really fucking cool photo. Like, I gotta give it up to the guy. It's good. It's a good picture. So if you like beautiful landscape pictures, you can thank this dude.
Thanks, Al.
So he's really one of the first to start using the medium this way and promoting it to be recognized and accepted as an art form. And he himself is a super eccentric dude. He's very passionate about his beliefs and very led by his emotions. He's like the no soup for you guy. But if the no soup for you guy from Seinfeld attached like a 45-minute argument onto why you're not getting the soup, like that's
intense. He's intense. I'd be like, dude, never mind. He's intense. Cool. I don't need the soup.
I gotta go. But wait, I gotta tell you why you didn't get the soup.
It's okay.
He's like really gnarly. He would do things like sell work to people based on what they could afford if he felt like they really loved the work, okay. Like if they were the ones that were going to appreciate it the most. Okay. And he also paid the people that worked for him very well and hardly made any money as a result of it. Mm. So he's a huge supporter of European and American avant-garde art movements like surrealism, abstractism, Dadaism, much like Peggy Guggenheim, how we go over it in that episode. He's really like alongside her as a promoter, collector, and he's the guy you want on your side for sure. He'll be your number one fan. He'll passionately argue for you. He's the Draymond Green of the art world. So he opens a gallery, 291, and this is like the it gallery to see hot new artists. Mm. And he shows Henri Matisse, Auguste Rodin, Henri Rousseau, Paul Cézanne, Pablo Picasso, Constantin Brancusi, and Dadaist Francis Picabia, Marcel Duchamp. They're all shown here. Those are like heavy hitters at the time.
The start of modernism.
But let's just like take a second and realize no girls in that
Bummer.
Lineup. No ladies in that lineup. Mm. But yeah. So when Georgia was studying at Columbia, remember she painted the dead bunny? Well, she goes to his gallery under her teacher's advisement to see an Auguste Rodin exhibition. And the sketches are like little line drawings with some watercolor. And she's just like, can't get into it. She's okay. Like, too scribbly.
Too scribbly.
Bye. Rodin, more like Rodin. She's just not able to get into it at that point. And she also overhears Stieglitz having like this heated argument with somebody. And she's like, no way. Not my jam. I'm going to get the fuck out of this gallery. Okay. So she's more like the type of person to keep her opinions to herself unless she has like a really good one-liner and then she'll drop it and just like walk out of the fucking room. You know?
Bye. You're welcome.
And my job. Bye. You're welcome for my presence. Okay. So at this point, a few years have passed since then. She's had her art awakening. She's more open-minded. She's making her special charcoal drawings and she sends them to Anita Pulitzer. And she's still sort of unsure of the work. Like, she's like, I don't know if I have something here. It's so different from what's been going on, guys. Like, it's really different. And Al sees the drawings and falls in love with them. So he has a quote, "Finally, a woman on paper. Why, they're genuinely fine things. I know she was a woman. Look at that line." Oh. And, yeah. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, he wants to show her work. And she's like, no, I don't want to show my work. It's not ready yet. And he goes ahead and shows it anyway. And puts it on an exhibition for her. And she overhears from somebody at school. They're like, have you seen Jinya O'Keefe at the 291 gallery? Like, are you related? And she's like, what? That's my fucking work. So she goes down there and she's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, take him down. But this guy is a smooth talker and basically says, you have no more right to keep these from the public eye than you do to kill somebody.
Okay.
Damn. Can you imagine? Like, you're like, okay. Right. So, I guess you can keep him up.
So that's a no.
So that's right. A no. So he keeps him up, but she like, you know, lets her guard down. And she's like, okay with it. So he really is all about getting women promoted. And he really does think that they deserve a place in the art world alongside men. Mm-hmm. So he does value women, but he wants to promote Georgia as being like a lady. Like, this is a lady drawing, you know? And she's not really interested in being viewed as a talented lady.
Right.
She just wants to be talented.
Like, I'm just an artist. I am like a person, right?
Right.
Yeah. We're people.
We're people.
It's fine.
But they do, like, they start developing a relationship out of this whole debacle and him being a total asshole. And it turns into, like, a correspondence affair. He loves her work. He's very much artmatized by her. And she's a lot younger than him. So he's, like, hottie, art, love her. Mm. He's all about it. But she's not sold on this idea yet. She moves to Texas to teach at West Texas State Normal College. And she had gone to school in Texas before, so she knew she loved the landscape. And this is really when her style of landscape painting blossoms. This is like the place where she first falls in love with the like wide open spaces.
Yeah.
She's into it. Wide open spaces.
Dude, so get out of the city, move to Texas.
Let's get out of the city.
And go a little slower.
Gonna walk down, girl.
Giddy up.
So she loves the vibe. She goes for long walks throughout and collects bones and brings them back to her studio to study and paint them. She's definitely an eccentric in this like conservative, gun toting, patriotic, Confederate sort of town.
All right, yeah.
Ma'am.
Ma'am. You're a little too crazy, ma'am.
Yeah,
you need to calm down.
She definitely stands out for what she does, things like wearing kimonos, and she's kissing lots of boys.
Oh.
She's laying on football fields in the rain with other college hotties. Mm. And she's changing in front of her open window where the public can see, and she knows it.
I bet.
She knows it.
Hell yeah. All right.
Burn her is what the town thinks, right?
You can't do that.
I mean, she's really just being like an artsy person, and she describes herself as being queer. But queer at the time, like, the definition of queer sort of changes throughout the years. So let's contextualize this. Queer at the time just means different.
Unique.
They're othering her. Mm-hmm. They're othering her hard. And she's a teacher at this university.
Okay.
So this is kind of a little, this is scandalous. This is a lot of conversation surrounding her. It's not easy to exist in this environment for somebody that's queer.
I'm going to assume that teachers kind of have a hard time in Texas sometimes.
I mean, I would think it would be harder in Florida, but yeah, I'm sure they have a hard time in Texas too.
For the most part.
So here's where she meets Paul Strand, and Paul Strand is another photographer, and he's the one that sort of calls out that her work looks like photographs painted onto paper. And the same principles of composition are aligned in photos, the way she carefully and deliberately zooms in on different parts of landscapes or bones is really highlighted and something she carries with her throughout the rest of her life's work. So let's look up Red Landscape. And this is a painting of Palo Duro Canyon. So you can still go and see exactly where she painted this today. And you can see the strong use of composition and color. She creates interest by the way the mountains are laid out in the image.
Mm-hmm.
It's abstracted and really demonstrates her interpretation of seeing the world. And there is like a startling, evocative sort of impact for me. I mean, the colors are really strong. Mm-hmm. And I'm not looking at this in a lens of like female or male at this point. I really just think it's like a strong painting.
Yeah, he's a red.
Red. Like very fucking red, right?
Yeah.
It's a good red she has there.
Sure. Red and black too, definitely.
Red and black.
But it's a good combo.
It's good. So then also look up Evening Star number 5. And 5 is like a V. So this one's a big breakthrough. No one had really done anything like this before. It's a watercolor painting with huge blotchy spots of vibrant colors. There's a yellow circle surrounded by a rusty orange. then a fiery red, then a deep, deep blue. And it gives you the feeling of light radiating from a star in the middle of the night. But it's not in any way depicting like a realistic picture.
Yeah.
You probably wouldn't even think that if it weren't for the title.
Right.
Her quote is, "It's big and it looks like hell let loose with a fried egg in the middle of it."
Oh, yeah. Could be an egg for sure.
"I feel as though I've burst and done something I hadn't done before." Mm. So we really see her skill set as an abstractionist develop at this time. But we also see she's like setting herself apart, like the fuck apart. I mean, these are iconic American places at this point. The Wild Wild West, the adventure, this is like uniquely American, I think. I don't know. What do you think, Joel?
No, for sure. Yeah. No, you could see from, I mean, we just got these like primary colors. I don't know why I feel like that's American, but like but like red and blue.
The like, evening what star, are you like doing? The Texas Lone Star. I just couldn't not make that connection, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you see it as a star, I guess you have to since it's the title.
You don't have to, but yeah, I mean, that's where I went with it.
Yeah.
But just because she loves Texas, like we mentioned, doesn't mean that Texas loves her. Uh-uh. And she is basically labeled unpatriotic in this little Texas town. And this is why. So this stupid little petty fucking story. So there's a little grocery mart that's selling Christmas cards. And one Christmas card has a depiction of bombing Germany and like obliterating Germany.
On a Christmas card?
On a Christmas card. And it's somehow also promoting the Statue of Liberty. I know. It's like, it sounds like a really loaded Christmas card.
It's like a snowman is fine. Just do that. Sorry.
Like, can't we just keep it classic? Yeah. Can we just do a Merry Christmas? Yeah. Why do we have to do like this weird political agenda? Well, this card somehow manages to get it all in there. And she's like, dude, can we not do this right now? And it's Christmas. So she goes to the shop owner and she's like, do you really, like, come on? And the whole town's basically like, heretic, burn her. She doesn't love America.
I do see those patriotic Santas at Home Goods during the holidays. Always kind of freaks me out of like, why do they have to?
Why does Santa? He have to be wearing red, white, and blue? Why does everything need to be patriotic?
Yeah, no, it's fully.
We can be like patriotic and not be like.
It doesn't have to be everywhere.
So she's already being sort of pushed out and wanting to leave Texas, and she's falling in love with Paul Strand, the photographer. She loves his idea. She's definitely like artmatized and interested in a relationship with him. And he's like, okay, Georgia, you are banging. He's all about it.
Okay.
But then she gets sick again.
Oh, come on, man. Seriously? What is she
gonna
know?
Yeah, she gets sick.
Why am I mad at this woman being sick?
She's always fucking getting sick. And Paula's like, this is too much, like too real for me. She's not working anymore. She's sick. And so he writes to a very married man to help take her off his hands, quote unquote.
Okay.
So who do you think the married man is? You guessed it. Alfred Stieglitz. So we're back to that dude. You knew he couldn't be that whole big spiel without not being very important, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So this whole time, our Georgia girl is a bit of a player. She's having regular correspondence with Al, even though she's in love with other dudes. And he even, in his letters to her, calls her his little Texan girl. Ew. Groomy. Gross. And he's very married and has been for a while.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, it's a loveless marriage. Okay, I'll give it to him. Okay. Apparently, they didn't have sex, like, the first full year of being married.
Damn.
Yeah, that's a long time to not have sex with somebody.
I was like, you know what? I'm not into this. Can you tell?
Especially for a dude. Like, he really must not have liked this bitch.
Yeah.
But it's said that he basically didn't like his wife because she, quote unquote, didn't become his twin. So that says a lot about this guy. Yeah. So he Yeah. It's an interesting pairing that him and Georgia sort of link up. And yeah.
Why would he like this chick? I mean, unless he wants to groom her.
I mean, if I'm thinking that I know him, and I think I do a little bit, I think he wants to groom all the ladies. Yeah, wow. I think that's his deal. He's got a huge ego. And so he writes to Georgia and offers her to move her into an apartment in New York City. And he supposedly comes to her as like an art admirer at first, not a sex wanterer. But he's a sex wanterer for sure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do fall for each other. And they do try very hard to keep people thinking that they're not sleeping together. To the point that they even hang a sheet up between their beds in the apartment to, like, convince people they're not sleeping together or something. Like, I don't know. They're like, nobody can see. Nobody's
That's
here.
Weird. Yeah. Cares about the sheet.
But yeah, so they're totally doing it, and they're doing it a lot. And I just want to remind, 23-year age difference here. 23 years. But she's 29, so it's not like she's like 16. A little less weird, but still, still not a great look with the married.
Yeah, being married is probably, not cute.
And at this time, it would have been like very scandalous. Like, she was dealing with a lot of harsh feedback for this. But I'm sure it was, like, exciting for her to sort of immediately be inserted into this circle of artist friends, going to shows, intermingling with other art types and their ideas and values. But she's not, like, overly romanticized with the whole thing. We got to remember, she still hates people.
Yeah.
She likes to be alone.
It's like, this is all cool, but I can only handle a couple minutes of this, and then I need to go.
Yeah. She's, like, not egoing at all. Mm-hmm. But so they're really, you know, she's dickmatized, he's vagmatized, they're both artmatized. And she's a really fucking hot lady, so I get it. And she's equally, you know, just disillusioned by him. But she becomes his muse. Mm. She poses for him in a series of nudie photos. And he does capture some strong images of her feet and that stoic, dead look that she likes to give. That's pretty iconic. Yeah. But they're very sexualized images. They're very hot. Ooh. So if you look up Georgia O'Keeffe Nudes by Alfred Stieglitz, you'll see the whole deal. And I'm just not thinking they're as impactful as maybe some of the other abstractive photos that you get are of naked ladies, like Robert Mapplethorpe or things like that.
Yeah.
These are really just like naked chick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There and so, of course, people are going to talk about that this is a naked chick, like, and sexualize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's very much the way that they're reviewed. Oh. And Georgia at this point is coming back to a little bit more representational art movement within abstract expressionism called precisionism. Mm-hmm. So precisionism is basically when an artist takes an everyday object and breaks it down to only be the essential geometric shapes you need to interpret it as an object. Okay. So there's a reduced amount of detail. You can guess where I'm going with this. What do you think she's gonna make next?
I don't know.
The flower paintings.
Flowers, are they?
Yeah. Okay, let me take a sip for this one. All right. So Georgia starts painting the iconic flowers. Or are they vaginas? Are they flowers? Or are they vaginas? Well, here's the deal. So Sigmund Freud in 1918 develops theories on sexuality and the unconscious. He's basically saying that things, even though you think they're not sex things, they're in the back of your brain being sex things. So you can make something that's not a sex thing, but you really think it's a sex thing.
Isn't he the guy that's all about, like, it all comes back to your mother kind of thing, whatever.
The Oedipus
thing. Whatever thing that you're into.
He's just, everything is sex. Sex, 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 sex.
You like feet. Everything. You saw your mom's feet at some point. You felt special way.
Yeah. That's exactly it. You get it. And these theories were becoming like widely accepted. And who do you think loves them? Your man, Al Stieglitz.
Ow.
So, he buys into the so he buys into it hard, and he reads into Georgia's work on her behalf. Like, he sexualizes the fuck out of all of it. And Georgia is not into this. She's like, no, 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 no. These are just flowers. And the reason they are interesting is because they are my flowers. This is the way I view the world. This is my direct interpretation of how they occur. That is what is interesting about them. And he's like, no, they're vaginas.
If we call them vaginas.
So let's look at Red Canna, 1924. Red Canna. So we see that she's selected and zoomed in on the direct central part of the flower.
Okay.
So much to the point where the waves and undulating shapes do resemble the petals and the inside of a flower, but you wouldn't really know it's a flower.
Yeah.
If you didn't know about the title. There's a strong use of volume and shape and light and depth. You get drawn in. You can very easily meditate and get lost in the color and the forms. But it's just undeniable that flowers resemble female genitalia for me. And I think people make this association very naturally. I don't think that she wanted it to happen, but I think it happens.
Right.
And sometimes in art, it occurs that way. And even though she didn't want these to be interpreted as vaginas, I mean, they fucking look like vaginas.
We all
like,
nasty. We nasty.
We all nasty. So. And so she adamantly denies the fact that there are vaginas. And on top of that, says that it's Al's fault for displaying her in those nudie photo exhibitions. She's like, dude, now everyone just thinks I'm this huge slut. And they can't think about anything else after you pose for you in your stupid fucking show. And it doesn't help that Al also uses the sexy hot critiques of her works to help sell it.
Yeah. So I could see that it helps selling the thing of everyone's going to want it if they're vagin. Well, I mean, not everybody. I think probably a lot of people probably didn't like that. But I think a lot of people were like, yeah, give me the flower.
Give me the vag painting. Give me the flower.
I don't care. Okay, I'll just give you a check, man.
But I mean, can you imagine, like, your partner is supposed to be the one that backs you, that, like, you know, sides with you, that supports you, that stands by you. And with art, I mean, it's the most important thing in the world to her, to any artist, right? And so imagine like having your partner being like, you don't get it. And it's okay if you don't get it, but this guy fucking, like, has a hand in how it's perceived in the media, by other critics. Like, it's okay if you're, like, married to, you know, like a plumber and they don't get it. That's one thing. Cool. That's different. That's this fine. Is like... This is like your publicist that you're married to.
We have an issue.
Yeah. And so he has a quote, "Women feels the world differently than man feels it. The woman receives the world through her womb. Mind comes second."
Okay. And how the fuck asshole. Would you know?
Right? Through like, how womb? Fucking dare
you? Dude, I don't even think about my womb. Ever. Oh, my God.
So gross.
Yeah, what a dick, man. Gross. Yeah, get rid of him in the trash.
Get out
in
here.
The trash.
In the trash. Put him in the trash can.
Yeah.
And so one of the critics has a quote, "Her art is gloriously female. Her great, painful, and ecstatic climaxes make us at last know something that man has always wanted to know. Women should always judge and always feel through the womb."
Oh, my God. Get out of my
the
womb.
Fuck? Get out of here, dude. No one invited you into the womb, okay?
Just because y'all think about your dicks all the time doesn't mean we think about our organs all the time.
Right?
Oh, my God.
So here's her quote. Let's hear from Georgia. "Everyone has many associations with a flower. You put out your hand to touch it or lean forward to smell it. Or maybe touch it with your lips, almost without thinking, or give it to someone to please them. But no one rarely takes the time to really see a flower. I have painted what each flower is to me, and I have painted it big enough so others see what I see. So really, she's just fucking painting flowers.
Zoomed and
she thinks they're beautiful. She's like, just try not to, like, you know, do that. Like, you don't have to explain it. Like Jackson Pollock, like, you don't need to know what it is. Just enjoy it.
It's just a zoomed in and it's a flower and I'm studying it. And I'm letting you study
it. It is what it is.
And if you see a vagina, that's a you problem.
Fucking pervert.
Gross. Got here.
Gross.
You're nasty.
You're nasty. So Al sees sexuality as liberating, and it's like part of the avant-garde movement, right? To be super sexy. And she really can't be bothered. She rejects feminist ideas that are inserted into the conversation on her work. She rejects that being female has influence. She's not feeding into gendered norms. In fact, she rejects them. In a way, which I think is really cool. She's really, like, of the mindset, like, your opinion's none of my business after this. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, I still feel like they're undeniably vaginas, but I don't know.
If she says what they're not, I'm going to believe her and just go, like, with it. But
let me ask you this. Like, does the work change if it's made by a man? Do you think it changes?
If it's made by a man, no. Mm-hmm. I don't know. No. If this was made by a dude, I mean, I would still think vagina. Like, oh, this dude likes vagina. That's cool.
Cool.
Awesome. But, and I think it is, I kind of thought of this too. I remember in when we were going to Sonoma State in our undergrad.
Right.
That I remember I kind of wanted to try to change my name on my paintings, mm-hmm. just to see if someone's going to tell me something fucking different than what the critiques that I was getting, that, oh, this is something feminist, something, which feminist just means that you want equal rights for men and women. Like, that's all that means. Like,
it's not that deep.
It's not, but like, we just love vagina. Ah!
I think people put, like, this bigger association to it than what it is. And she very much is like, no, I don't want to be
worry about that I'm a woman.
Affiliated with all that.
Yeah.
She's not trying to be that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, I don't think I would see them differently if they were painted by a dude. And I think probably a lot of dudes see it differently. Oh, this was painted by a woman. Ah, oh, I get it. It's got to be something to do with her genitals.
Right.
Of, like, maybe I'm playing into that a little bit with my own little weirdness. But of whatever socialized bullshit I have in the back of my head. But I
mean, yeah, we all have those socialized biases. It's really hard to rid of them. But until you think about questions like this, like, would it change your interpretation of the work if it were made, you know, by a different gender? Mm. So something to think about there.
Yeah, no, definitely. But they're just fucking flowers, and that's cute. I love it.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Why not?
Yeah.
Fucking love flowers. Flowers are great.
Flowers are great.
Big fan of flowers. Flowers, they're in. So this is sort of her first real interaction with the press and what they think, and being publicly criticized across multiple articles. So as you could imagine, like, praise or not, she's not into it. And it really infuriates her and embarrasses her. And we sort of see this withdraw from the press and hatred for fame.
Okay.
And yeah, and so she and Al sort of create this new image, almost like she creates a protective image of herself. She becomes more severe looking, and she's like, creates a sort of mystery. She makes her own clothes, and she's dressed in the signature all black, and her and Alfred are sort of curating this image together. They wear black capes and interesting hats, and they're very aware of how they're interpreted as a couple. They just look like the funky, interesting, weird, artsy couple.
For sure.
Kind of like Kanye and his girlfriend. What's her name?
I don't know.
Yeah. And mind you, yeah, I don't know. But, you know, they're like trying, they're making a statement for sure.
It's like our brands, quirky. Mm-hmm. We got to be quirky.
They're branding. You got to be different. They're branding hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she definitely puts her guard up. And mind you, he's still married. So it's like almost a little flaunty at this point, like that they're a couple, like they're being photographed together. It's very well known. They're not hiding it anymore. His wife doesn't want to give him a divorce. So they just keep on keeping on being this hot, sexy, fucking heavily criticized artsy couple.
Well, and I'm sure it gives them some press, mystique. Too, of like, yeah. Oh, and I heard he's married and wife knows.
No, he's married to like, the like a big time lady, like she's the the heir of Sears.
So oh shit,
she's okay. Loaded. Okay. And part of the reason she's not divorcing him is because of the money.
The money, yeah. I know, I wouldn't either. I'm like, oh, do whatever you want. You are not getting any of my shit. You can suck it.
Suck it. Yeah, no.
Go crazy with your girlfriend. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, no. And so it takes them a while. And so they're, you know, they have their city life in New York. And then they summer at his family's house in upstate New York, St. George. Okay. And from this point on, she's more dedicated to interpreting reality more directly. She does not want to do anything that resembles a vagina.
Right.
She's like, no, 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 no. Nothing sexual. I don't want to be sexual for anyone else.
Yeah.
And so when they go to St. George, we see more direct nature interpretations and landscapes and trees and leaves and shit like that. And the family really accepts her despite them having an affair. Oh. But she does not accept the family.
Okay.
She thinks they're all fucking annoying. Yeah. He comes from like a house that has a million fucking people in it.
Okay.
And just like him, his family's loud. They're always fighting. And she's just like, hates not having privacy. She hated having people around all the time. So she turns an old shed on the property into her own private studio and doesn't even let Al inside. It's like, no, get the fuck out. Okay, all of you away.
Yeah.
So she makes work all day and he makes work all day. And then they come together at night and they like are like, look at all this cool shit I made. And so they're separately on, like, doing work inspired by the landscape of St. George, which is a lot of, like, foresty trees, lakes, beaches. And they're really doing work alongside each other. It's a symbiotic relationship. And the aesthetic is really similar.
Mm.
And this goes on for 10 fucking years.
Okay. Seems to be a good system for the most part.
Yeah, they keep having to go back and forth. And I just can't imagine having to live with any other family other than my immediate nuclear family.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like,
no,
of my husband
her.
And my kids. Like, being around anybody else for too long just sounds like it would get so tiring.
In the back.
And, well, that's what she did. No. She had a shack in the back.
That for sure. I feel her because I can't handle that many people around me.
But so even though there's like family everywhere, they're still keeping it hot and spicy. Nieces talk about them at the dinner table not even being able to like keep their clothes on to the staircase. They're just running upstairs to fuck
God.
Each other.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's get into some like weird relationship things.
Yeah. I want to hear all this stuff.
Yeah. So he was a hypochondriac and was, quote, most happy when Georgia was in bed and he could take care of her.
Okay.
No, not okay. So,
like in bed sick?
Yeah, like he wanted her like in bed so he could like take care
of her. Like control everything.
Control her.
Okay.
And he felt she was too fragile to be like out in the elements. Oh. And I mean, I get it. She was sick like a million fucking times. But I still think it's fucking weird and controlling. Like he likes her the most to be in bed.
Like vulnerable.
Yeah, vulnerable. Yeah. He likes her to be like a soft dove or some bullshit. And she's more quiet and reserved, and he's definitely attention seeking. So they would like go out to a dinner and he'd be like talking to friends and she would just leave and go to like a show by herself.
Hell yeah. I'm doing that next time.
Okay, like you go do your thing where you talk for way too long.
Like, dude, she left.
Georgia?
She left 20 minutes ago.
Where'd you go? Yeah, like, fucking.
That's hella good.
So from 1923 onward, he would curate an exhibition for her and only her every single year for 22 years that they were married.
All right.
So that's nice. That's
nice.
She wanted to have a baby very, very badly, which surprises me. I didn't take her to be like very,
mom
maternal.
Vibes.
Yeah. No. She kind of like seems like she wouldn't be the most like.
Because you have to be with somebody else 24/7.
Yeah. But he already had a daughter who was fully grown up and who fucking hates Georgia. Oh, wow. And he convinces Georgia that their lifestyle just doesn't fit having another baby. And so that sort of creates a lot of resentment there.
Yeah.
By 1927, she sells 6 paintings within that year and for $17,000. Mm-hmm. And so this is like fucking unprecedented for her time. No woman had ever sold that many paintings for that much money. Mm-hmm. And she becomes kind of the sole breadwinner of the household.
Wow.
And her reputation is growing. I mean, she's super smart. She can now sell things without him. And she's relying less and less on his opinions and less on his connections. And she realizes her worth. And so obviously he fucking hates this. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when she tries to set a boundary with him and is like, I'm not going to St. George anymore. Well, that's the straw that broke that camel's back, and he decides he's going to start looking elsewhere for sexy time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
So it's not that he has like a bunch of different affairs with a lot of different women, but he does start a big affair with Dorothy Norman. So she's a socialite. She's 20 years old, and she's also married.
Oh.
And she's young, she's hot, and she's very willing to be molded into whatever Stieglitz wants her to be.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not talking trash on the other lady. This is, the man is always to blame here. Okay. It's just when you're 20, you're a lot more impressionable.
You don't know
and like
anything.
You didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
So much like the affair he had with Georgia, he's not exactly hiding it, but he's also pretending it's not happening.
Okay.
So they're still together, him and Georgia. Like, and they're still, you know, side by side, and he's just like, you know, having a full-fledged affair. And she felt like she couldn't go to him and just tell him to stop. She kind of has this idea that like everybody's happiness is their own responsibility. Okay. And yeah, and so she feels like, you know, if he feels he has to do that for her, his happiness, I just have to figure out what I need to do for mine.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that she's not incredibly heartbroken by this. So she makes a choice to escape this mess and finally goes to New Mexico in 1929. Yeah. So she gets invited by Mabel Dodge Lujan, who is married to a Puebloan, Tony Lujan, which is super radical for the time.
Okay.
And she and her friend, Beck Strand. So you remember Paul Strand, the photographer she was in love with before?
Yeah.
It's his wife.
Oh.
And so his wife and him are having problems. She's having problems with Al. And so they're like, let's get the fuck out of here. Fuck these dudes. And let's go to New Mexico and hang out with Mabel. Yeah. Fuck them. But side note, it's thought that Beck Strand also had fucked Al Stieglitz at one point. So everybody's fucking everybody.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So here. So it's here that Georgia truly finds a place she can call home. She buys a black Ford sedan, which she names Hello. She learns to drive, apparently loves to drive really fucking fast. Like, she's always going 90 miles per hour. That's her regular. Okay. She's got a need for speed. She could be in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah.
She has fun. She drinks wine. She goes dancing. They go horseback riding in the mountains. She's skinny dipping in the river. And, of course, the rumor, the tea, starts here with affairs with the
lady time.
Lady luck can be a lady tonight.
I want to know all about the ladies.
So it's so hard because this bitch keeps her card so close to her chest. But luckily, people have come out, you know, since then and been like, oh no, they fucking. So it's through, it's thought that her and Rebecca Strand are sleeping together and Mabel Dodge and Georgia are sleeping together and Mabel Dodge and Rebecca Strand are sleeping together and that Georgia's even sleeping with Tony Lujan, Mabel's husband. So it's kind of just thought that, you know, during this time, they're all hanging out. They're all having different sexual encounters. And it's really just like an incestuous situation amongst this friend group.
Is it like polyamorous or like, I'm doing this behind this one's back and this one doesn't know?
No, it definitely does not seem like drama. It's definitely like
free love, you know, type of thing.
Free love.
Okay.
And I think that, and I buy the rumor, like I really think that they just have this really liberating time.
Yeah.
All sort of just following their instincts and being led by, you know, who they want to sleep with.
All right.
And having like a sexual awakening. I think it's the perfect landscape for it. I mean, they're gone from everything. They're both like fed up with whatever they have going on.
Yeah.
And it just seems like a really cool, fun time for them.
I'd be down.
I'm like so happy for them, right? And there's other artists coming in here like Ansel Adams and Frida Kahlo. And so with Frida and the Georgia smituation, sexuation. So there's a quote from Frida about meeting Georgia. She did not make love to me that time. Too bad.
Oh.
And the Georgia O'Keeffe Foundation says, oh, making love can mean anything.
Whatever.
Like flirting or something. Like, okay.
No, they're scissoring.
And it's fine. Like, do
we
it.
We love it.
Oh, we're here
gosh.
For it.
Please do.
Live your best life. So I totally buy into this, like,
yeah.
sexy
they're doing
time.
It.
And so the Georgia O'Keeffe, like, foundation, her family, like, all of them definitely want to keep this under the wrap. But as we come to new understandings of how history is portrayed, there are thoughts that in the past we were looking at Georgia's life and her work in, like, a heteronormative lens. Mm. And now that we have exposure and a better understanding of, like, gendered and sexualized biases, we can now sort of piece together what really happened between these women and why. And also, when she met Tony Lujan, so he's like a native Puebloan of New Mexico, and the culture, I think she found really inspiring. So there's part of this Puebloan culture that basically doesn't have these black and white interpretations of gender roles. Mm. There's more fluidity within it. She finds it super fascinating. So with the vaginas and the flowers, we can dig deeper. And I think we owe it to Georgia to be more complex than that. She wanted to be viewed without gender identity because she didn't strongly identify with being female gender or male gender. She was just like somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And that's more of like a queer identity now, right?
For
it's
sure.
like, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm just different, and let me just do my different self.
Mm-hmm.
So awesome. It's really a great time for her. She rediscovers herself, gets back to who she was before, is more, because this whole time I'm thinking like, bitch, why are you living in the city?
Yeah.
And then why are you going out to the, like, the upstate with the family? Like, you don't like any of that.
Sounds
like,
waspy.
Why are you doing it's just, it just sounds like too many people for you. If you really value being alone and independent, why
desert.
Are you not being alone and independent,
right?
And it's, you know, like her and Al Stieglitz, they just have this very codependent relationship. So she's in New Mexico having the time of her life. She has lovers, men, women. She's learning about the local cultures and discovers this new part of herself and is back to her wide open spaces. So inevitably, she has to return to New York.
Yeah.
I just feel for her, like, having to go back
there
to that horrible, horrible place. And I think here's where we'll kind of take a break. Come back for part two.
Intermission.
What happened?
Go get some wine.
Go get some wine. You're gonna fucking need it. Okay. Get some snacks. And come back next week. Okay. I'll just give you a little insight into what happens next week. Let's just say nervous breakdown. No. Possibly, you know, Al dying. Happens. I mean, and thank God. we'll also, you know, have a reconnect with New Mexico in a more permanent way. And we'll even see another big sexy rumor happen. So you're not gonna want to miss it.
Broke bees.
I assure you, it's gonna be good stuff. Thank you for hanging out with us. Georgia deserves a two-parter. It's just a long, long story for a long living bitch.
So it keeps just being T-T-T-T-T the whole time.
Just T-T-T-T-T-T-T-T. So there's more that happens. Thank you for checking back in. We love you.
Love you.
Bye.
On my way back home again. Cross the desert.